Welcome to Food for Thought. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau from Compassionate Cooks. I founded Compassionate Cooks to empower people to make informed food choices and to debunk myths about vegetarianism and animal rights. You can learn more about who we are and what we do by visiting our websites, CompassionateCooks.com and JoyOfVeganBaking.com. So I'm really excited to thank today's sponsors. It's actually a couple, and technically they each deserve their own podcast recognition because they each made a generous podcast contribution. But since today is a very long episode, I thought I would thank them both here, but I will definitely talk about them again, I'm sure. Today's sponsors are Ari Solomon and Miko Alon. I had first received Ari's sponsorship along with a really sweet email in which he wrote, "Hi Colleen, my partner and I have been vegan for about 6 months now, and we just came across your podcast a week ago and we love it. I've been listening to it at work, and then when I come home, I play them for my partner and listen to them again. I can't tell you the sense of empowerment we feel after listening to you. It's true that sometimes you get exhausted responding to people when they say things to you like, 'Well, if you were stranded on a desert island,' your insights are always thoughtful, direct, and full of compassion, and your research and knowledge is truly eye-opening and inspiring. Thank you so much for all the work you do. It's so important because, as you say, the animals don't have a voice, but yours reaches so many. I've borrowed one of your quotes, by the way, which I think is one of the most powerful things I've heard in years. I say it to anyone who engages in discussions with me about my veganism. Don't do nothing because you can't do everything. Do something. Anything." So that was from Ari, and obviously I was and am very touched. Well, that same day, I received another generous contribution from someone named Miko, and I have no idea what made me look, but his email address indicated that he had his own website. So I checked, and on his website, he's a filmmaker, he's a writer, he's a producer, which is fingatepictures.com, F-I-N-N-G-A-T-E, pictures.com. On his website, he had an area where that had photos and descriptions of other people who were involved in his production company. And lo and behold, there was a picture of Ari Solomon. So I put two and two together and figured out that they were a couple. I'm pretty quick. So I thought perhaps the second contribution was done in error. You know, sometimes couples don't communicate with each other about such things. So I wrote to Miko and thanked him, but I told him that I understood if the second contribution was a mistake and I offered to refund him. But he wrote back and he said, "We did mean to make a second donation, Ari, and I feel your podcast is so wonderful and important and we're thrilled to be able to support it. Thank you so much for everything you do." So these are just two fabulous guys, and I've had the pleasure of meeting them when they were in San Francisco, and again, very generously treated David and I to a dinner at Millennium Restaurant, which is a fancy schmancy vegan restaurant in San Francisco, if you don't know about it. And it was really fantastic spending time with them. And they have fast become activist extraordinaire. They are amazing spokespeople for the animals. In fact, in the same week, each of them had a letter, beautifully written letters, printed in the LA Times, which is really amazing. Amazing, just amazing stuff. So also check out Ari's website. Ari and his sister have a company called Ascent of Scandal. And the website is, write this down, www.ascent, S-C-E-N-T, of Scandal. He sells candles. Get it? Ascent of Scandal. It's a little play on words there. So he sells fantastic soy-based candles that come in a number of scents and in recyclable tins. Ari and his sister, like I said, run this company, and I encourage you to check it out. It's really fantastic. And you can also read Ari and Miko's stories of transformation if you visit the Joyful Vegan website. Go to CompassionateCooks.com and under writings, click on Joyful Vegan, and their story is called "If I Wouldn't Eat My Cat." So thank you so much, Ari and Miko, for your generous sponsorship. You are more than podcast sponsors now. You've both become friends, and I'm very grateful to you both. And please give kisses to your gorgeous, gorgeous kitties, Minnie and Hudson, for me, okay? If you are willing and able, please visit CompassionateCooks.com and click on Support Our Podcast. Anything you can do to help me continue this work is much appreciated. I cannot promise that it will make me do the podcast every day, but it will definitely enable me to do the podcast every week. So thank you very, very much. So I was planning to make today's episode a follow-up on a previous episode I did called Five Favorite Foods, and I was going to call this one Five More Favorite Foods, which are easy enough for me to identify. identify. But as I started writing all about the first favorite food, which is beans, I realized that there was enough to take up an entire episode. So I will do the five more favorite foods another time. I don't know who I think I was thinking I could just do an episode on five favorite foods when beans was one of the category. There's so much to say just about beans. I suppose I could have done one on my favorite bean and just made that my one of my five favorite foods. But I wanted to cover this whole food group. And I will talk about my favorite bean, but you're going to have to wait until I get there. Maybe you can guess what it is. So beans. We don't know the origin of the word bean. We don't know the origin of the word bean. But it is one of my favorite words. People who know me know that I use the word bean as a term of endearment. And I use it quite frequently. I use a number of variations of that word as names for my cats. I call them their bean bags or their butter beans or their string beans or the bean poles. Mostly pumpkin beans. I realize that makes no sense. Precious bean, anything that's really cute is a precious bean. Beanie bean, and just bean. It's an incredibly versatile word and it's an incredibly versatile food. So I encourage you to eat beans, but also use the word bean. It really works. It's really an amazing word. So we don't know the origin. I don't know why I'm such a spaz today. I don't drink coffee. This just comes naturally. Though we don't know the origin of the word bean, we do know that the word bean originally referred to the seed of the broad bean, and it was later broadened to include other long beans, other green beans like the runner bean and the snow pea. But we use the word bean to refer to the types of beans we're going to talk about today, the common bean. Those common beans are black beans, kidney beans, white beans, etc. Now, some people also refer to peas and lentils as beans, and they're technically in the same family. So let's back up a bit. Beans are a kind of legume. A legume is any of the thousands of plant species. There are 18,000 known this far in the legume family, the leguminosa family. Legumes have seed pods that, when ripe, split along both sides. Beans, lentils, peanuts. Botanically, peanuts are not nuts. They're legumes. Peas, soybeans, these are some of the common legumes consumed by humans. Clover and alfalfa are also legumes. I guess the easiest way to distinguish between the different types of legumes is to make a generalization that beans are usually kidney-shaped or oval, peas are round, and lentils are usually flat and in the shape of a disc. Okay? The broad bean, like the fava bean is an example of a broad bean, is among the most ancient plants in cultivation and also among the easiest to grow. And I know, because I grow them. It's believed that along with lentils and peas and chickpeas, beans became part of the Eastern Mediterranean diet in around 6,000 BC or earlier. 6,000 BC or earlier. They are often grown as a cover crop as well, and we do this in our garden. We grow fava beans, and then when the plants actually grow, we cut them back, and we leave the roots in the soil because they add a lot of nitrogen to the soil. So they're often used as a cover crop because of all the nitrogen they put in the soil. So today we're going to talk specifically, though, about beans, not peanuts or fava beans or broad beans or runner beans or snap peas or snow peas. We will talk about chickpeas and black beans and kidney beans and pinto beans and white beans. And another day we'll talk about green beans and broad beans. And another day we'll talk about lentils and split peas and that kind of thing. Okay. Now, as I mentioned earlier, beans are so versatile with many different kinds cultivated around the world. There are so many dishes with so many flavors that we can prepare. The idea, the myth that a plant-based diet is limited or bland is a myth that is clearly perpetuated from someone who is eating a meat-centered diet who doesn't recognize the thousands of options and flavor combinations at our fingertips. But before I talk about each bean, I'd like to first say a few things about their nutrients in general and about cooking beans. First, let's talk about the nutritional benefits of consuming beans. Beans are incredibly healthful foods. When you look at the nutrient density of beans, you can see why beans are recommended for people who want to lose weight. They're packed with fiber, which people are not getting enough of, primarily because people eat so many things devoid of fiber, namely meat, dairy, and eggs. And these fiberless foods displace all of the healthful fiber rich foods. It appears that about 40 grams of fiber a day is optimum, but people are getting an average of 10 grams of fiber a day. 10 grams of fiber versus 40 or more. And I don't mean fiber in a pill. I mean fiber in foods. So look at beans. The amounts vary a little bit from bean to bean, but on average, it's safe to say that a cup of beans contains 10 grams of fiber. Now, I definitely eat more than one cup a day. One can, for instance, is about a cup and a half. So my fiber intake is very high because of all the plant foods I eat. So they're packed with fiber, and as I said, they're packed with protein. One cup of beans is usually about 16 grams of protein. Complex carbohydrates, they're low in calories, they contain no saturated fat, no cholesterol, as you know, because they're plant foods, and they're a great source of B vitamins and potassium and iron. There's just so many good things about beans. At a conference I spoke at recently, a young guy, he was no more than 20 or so, asked me after my talk, because I was talking all about processed foods and, you know, how we really want to eat whole foods, and he asked me what was wrong with processed foods. He said he eats a lot of the processed foods, eats a lot of vegetarian meat, and he was really sincere when he said, "What's so bad about processed foods?" And I told him that the worst thing about processed foods is that they're not whole foods. You know what I mean? Every time we eat processed food or meat or dairy or eggs, we're displacing, we're not getting healthful plant foods. If you center your meals around processed foods, it means you're not centering your meals around whole foods. And I think that is the biggest problem. And I'll add my disclaimer, as I always feel I need to do when I talk about this. This doesn't mean you can't ever have a vegetarian hot dog or processed food. It just means don't make them the foundation of your vegan diet, okay? And please don't avoid beans because you think you have to cook them from scratch and you start complaining and you start whining and moaning. You don't have to cook them from scratch. You can eat canned beans. They're more expensive than dried beans that you soak yourself, but if you can afford it, then please eat them. You're not losing anything in terms of nutrition. The biggest drawback is that they're more expensive and they tend to have a lot of salt. So just get salt-free canned beans or do what I do and just rinse them and drain them after you open them, okay? Now, I'll give you a few ways of preparing the different beans, and I'll include instructions for both dried beans as well as canned beans. The cooking times for dried beans varies, but 2 hours is kind of the average. But let me just give you some general guidelines first. First of all, the first step in preparing beans from scratch is deciding that you're going to cook them. The difference between making a chili from canned beans or making a chili from dried beans has everything to do with planning in advance. But here's the deal, folks. I think we should be planning all of our meals in advance. I absolutely believe that you should know the day before what you're going to have the next day for lunch or for dinner. Put it this way, when you're leaving for work in the morning, you should absolutely know what you're going to have for dinner that night. You could have a simple stew that you made the night before when you were watching television. You could have the veggies cut up in advance so you have everything for a stir fry when you get home and some rice or quinoa cooked. You should have a nice big green salad in the refrigerator all chopped up and ready to eat when you get home. You should absolutely be planning your meals in advance anyway. If your goal is to eat healthfully, planning it in advance, planning your meals in advance will ensure success every time. If you think you're going to eat healthfully by putting everything together when you get home from work, then I wish you luck. We haven't proven that we are very good at that part. We're tired. We're tired and we're already hungry. And when we're already hungry, it's not really the best time to start putting a meal together because you're just going to want to grab whatever is fastest because you're hungry. Okay? So that's my advice. So yeah, making beans from scratch requires some advanced planning, but good. And skip this step if you're already happy using canned beans. Let me just talk a little bit about dried beans. The second step in preparing dried beans is soaking them first. And there are a few ways of doing this, but you should always soak dried beans before cooking them. And again, like do this at night and so that they're soaking overnight when you're sleeping. It doesn't require any work on your part. It's just the advanced planning. So first of all, when you soak the beans, you're softening them up and you're returning moisture back to the beans. Soaking them reduces the cooking time, and it also helps release the sugars in the beans. And the sugars in the beans is what causes the discomfort that some people have when they eat beans. It's the sugar in the beans. And our intestinal tracts have a hard time digesting this sugar. More on that later. But when you soak the beans, you release the sugar from the beans into the water. And that's why you should always get rid of the water the beans have soaked in. Don't cook the beans in the same water that they soaked in, okay? All of the sugars are in that water and you want to get rid of those sugars, right? Make sense? So soak the beans. Just use a large enough pot that can handle the beans doubling or tripling in size. Like I said, I usually do it overnight because it's just easier, but 6 hours is usually enough time for each pound of dried beans, which is about 2 cups. I usually add about 10 cups of cold water and let them soak overnight. But you don't really have to measure 10 cups, just add enough water to handle the beans doubling or tripling. The other thing you can do is something called hot soaking your beans. This helps to dissolve some of the gas causing sugars even more. So again, for each pound of beans, 2 cups, add 10 cups of hot water, heat to boiling, let boil for 2 to 3 minutes, remove from heat, cover, and set aside for at least 1 hour or up to 4 hours. Again, a couple more steps and, you know, whatever. I just like the overnight soak personally, but that's another option. Once they're soaked, you drain that soaking water and you rinse the beans really well. You want to cook the beans in fresh water. In general, beans take about 1 hour to 2 hours to cook. It really depends on the variety, but, you know, you should stay pretty close to the beans when they're cooking on the stove. I will admit, I have burned more than my fair share of beans cooking on the stove. So what I do now is I just bring a timer upstairs with me when I'm working so that I can check the beans every half hour or so. And as it gets closer to the finished stage, every 15 minutes or so. And you should be getting up every 15 minutes anyway to stretch. But if you're going to just do this at home, you know, on a Saturday or at night or something, just stay pretty close to the stove or bring a little timer with you. So here are some general tips for cooking the beans. Flavor the beans while they cook. You can add minced garlic or chopped onions or spices and herbs such as cumin or chili powder or oregano or parsley or thyme while the beans are cooking. All the flavors will kind of soak into the beans. Add acidic ingredients. Acidic ingredients are tomatoes, vinegar, wine, or citrus juices only at the very end of cooking when the beans are already tender. And this is also the case for salt. Don't add salt while the beans are cooking. If you do, the salt may cause the bean skins to become impermeable, which halts the cooking process. So don't add the salt or anything acidic until the very end after the beans are already tender. And then to tell that they're done, you just kind of bite test a few beans. They should be tender, but not overcooked. And then when you cool or store the beans, you want to just make sure they remain in the cooking liquid or even fresh water if you wanted to kind of dump out the cooking liquid and just store them in fresh water, okay? You just don't want them to dry out. So let's talk about some specific beans, and let's start with black beans. The black bean, also called the black turtle bean, is commonly used in countries in and around the Caribbean, the islands, Mexico, Central America, and the northern part of South America. Black beans are really delicious. They have a dense, kind of almost a meaty texture, and they're kind of earthy, like mushrooms. A really simple way to prepare them. Now, if you were doing this from scratch, you would first soak them, and then you would cook them along with some minced garlic, some onions, some cumin, some chili powder, and then, like I said, you can add the salt at the very end. And then at the end, you can also stir in some chopped fresh tomatoes or canned tomatoes or salsa. If you're using canned beans, just heat them up on the stove with some fresh water. You know, you've rinsed and drained them if they were in a can, and then you heat them up in some fresh water. And then you just add some cumin or chili powder while they're actually heating up. And while that's happening, at the same time, in a separate little pan, you can just saute some garlic, some onions, some tomatoes, again, some salsa, whatever you want, and just kind of do that separately. And then when you're going to serve the beans, you just mix up those tomatoes and the onions and the garlic in with the beans. You drain them first, drain the water out, obviously, and you just mix up the beans. So my point is that you want to end with some kind of a combination of flavored beans with, you know, flavored with the onions and the garlic and the tomatoes. Okay, so that's whether you're doing it from scratch or doing the beans from a can. And then you can serve this over brown rice. You can serve it over corn. You could use canned corn. You could use frozen corn. You could use fresh corn. You can serve it over rice with some corn. You can use quinoa that you made the night before or that morning. But you just basically put it all together. At dinner time, you can make burritos with corn or flour tortillas and lots of fixings. Again, if you do this, if you just used canned beans, you can just heat the beans up in some water and then just put out all the fixings. You don't have to necessarily add the onions and garlic, because the fixings that you're going to put out for everybody is going to include things like salsa, tomatoes, you know, fresh or canned, shredded lettuce, even raw onions if you want. But do feel free to do the same thing I described above if you're going to make burritos. And then you can also put shredded lettuce. Did I say shredded lettuce? And then brown rice. And it's just easy and just fast. It's just really fantastic. Fast, fast, fast. The other thing you can do instead of making burritos, you can make tacos, and you can use black beans for tacos as well. Do the same thing I described above and just use taco shells instead. And you can also make something like a black bean paste. You know, just basically mash up the black beans and then, like I said, add some sauteed garlic and onions. And the reason you do this is to just ensure that the little beans don't escape your taco shell, because it's a little different if you're eating it from a taco shell than from a tortilla that you wrap up. Quesadillas. I have an assistant who helps me in the classes, and she always makes me say quesadillas. So quesadillas, she's Mexican, by the way, so she makes me say quesadillas. I don't say it right if I just say quesadillas. So quesadillas are wonderful and fantastic and easy to make. And you can make quesadillas with non-dairy cheese, but what's even healthier is what I do. You may use hummus instead of the cheese. Now, I know that sounds weird, but just trust me. You have to trust me here. So get a flour or corn tortilla. You spread hummus on half of the tortilla, just like you were making a quesadilla. Place it on a nonstick pan on the stove over low to medium heat, face up, and let the tortilla start to get golden brown while you have the tortilla down and the hummus is already on there. Then you would put some black beans, maybe the black bean paste, some salsa, maybe some shredded lettuce, maybe some sliced avocado, maybe some spinach leaves, tomatoes, salsa, anything that you want, but you want to keep it pretty thin. You don't want to make a mess, because if you overdo it, it's going to become a bloody mess. So just a thin layer of all these things that I just named. Now, you fold over the empty half of the tortilla onto the side that has all the wonderful ingredients, and you just give it a few minutes to get, you know, golden brown on the bottom half that's on the, you know, that's near the flame. And then you also want to kind of glue the two sides of the tortilla together, and then you take a really large spatula and you turn it over so that other side gets golden brown. Now, when you're making these quesadillas, remember that when you first start, the first quesadilla might take a little longer to cook because the pan isn't really hot. And then as you make two or three or four, the pan's really hot, so it goes pretty quickly. It goes very quickly, so just make sure you don't burn the tortilla. So it's great. I mean, that's all it is. And you're just making a quesadilla with no queso. The queso means cheese, quesadilla. You're not using any cheese. You're using hummus instead. It's so easy, and it's super, super yummy. And it's really best when served hot, when the tortilla is nice and crispy still and the hummus is hot. Okay. Now, burritos and tacos and quesadillas are definitely more Mexican, but black beans are also very popular in Cuban cuisine as well. There's a popular Cuban dish called moros y cristianos, which just basically means Moors and Christians. And it's basically black beans and white rice. And it's served in other places in Latin America too. It's super easy to make. And though I usually recommend using whole grains or whole rice as opposed to white rice as often as possible, this is something you can do if you want to make a traditional Cuban dish. It's similar to what I described above, but you add chopped peppers and a few other ingredients. So just do a search for Cuban Moors and Christians, Moros y Cristianos, and then you'll find lots of great recipes. And if there's a recipe that calls for chicken stock, just use vegetable stock instead. You can make Cuban black bean soup with black beans. You can make black bean burgers, which I have a recipe for. There are so many things you can do with black beans. You can make black bean chili, which is super easy and delicious. And you can serve that over cornmeal or polenta or cornbread. You can make a really quick black bean salad, either with just black beans, or I usually do kind of a variety of beans just because I like a variety of textures and color and flavors. But the quickest thing to do is just open up your cans of beans, rinse and drain them, add a can of corn, drained of course, add some salsa, add some guacamole or cubed avocado, some fresh tomatoes if they're in season, and you've got a really quick bean salad. Or you can leave out the salsa and just add seasoned rice vinegar and some fresh herbs. It's a really quick salad that you can serve then over shredded greens and brown rice, so it can be an entire meal. And by the way, all of these recipes, the recipes for my three bean chili, I have burritos, I have tacos, I have quesadillas, I have the Cuban black bean soup, black bean burgers, they're all available on my online cookbook at compassionatecooks.com. So if you've missed anything here and you'd like to get the recipes, you can purchase them on the website if you're interested, but I'm trying to give you some recipes in the podcast. There's a comfort food category, there's a 30-minute meals category, Burgers and Backyard Bites has the black bean burger, for instance. So you can just check those out on the website. The next bean I want to talk about are kidney beans. The kidney bean with the dark red skin, it's named for its resemblance to an actual kidney. The kidney bean is also known as the red bean, but this usage can cause confusion because there are other red beans just called red beans. Kidney beans are a large part of the cuisine of North India, as well as in place of red beans, you can use red beans or kidney beans in the popular red beans and rice dish of Louisiana cuisine, Louisiana Creole cuisine. Small red beans are noticeably smaller and darker than kidney beans. They have a smoother taste and they tend to be preferred for Cajun cuisine, but either is fine. I love kidney beans. I love them for their heartiness, for their texture, for their color, but as much as I love kidney beans, and I love kidney beans, they're still not my favorite bean. Interesting. Wonder what it is. The most common thing that I do with kidney beans is add them to my daily salad. I generally have a salad for lunch every day, which I did today. I had lots of lettuce from my garden and tomatoes from my garden. I'm still getting tomatoes out of my garden. And then I add beans and carrots and sprouts and tofu sometimes and peppers, but I always add beans. Now I either add kidney beans or garbanzo beans, and it's just a great way to get in again a lot more fiber and lots of nutrients. My other common use for kidney beans is in my three bean chili. I mentioned that in the black bean category and the three bean salad. So kidney beans are great in those as well. They just add a really nice contrast. I like the chewiness, the heartiness of the kidney bean, which contrasts really well to the black and the pinto beans, which are a little softer. And though white beans are great for making creamy spreads or dips, you can also do the same with kidney beans. In a food processor or blender, you can combine kidney beans with garlic, you know, just some like raw garlic, some cumin, some chili peppers for a delicious spread that you can use as like a crudité dip or a sandwich filling. You can even throw a can of kidney beans, rinsed and drained, of course, into some pasta sauce while it's heating up on the stove. Again, you get like more texture and fiber and lots of nutrients by doing so. You can also get white kidney beans, and white kidney beans are cannellini beans. Cannellini beans, white kidney beans, same thing. Okay, so cannellini beans are the same size as kidney beans. They're a little larger than other white beans, which I will segue into right now. This is a general category, white beans that contain the cannellini, Great Northern, navy beans. The small white navy bean might also be called a pea bean or a haricot, and it's used in such popular dishes as the Boston baked beans, which I also have in my comfort food packet, one of my comfort food packets. Probably my favorite way of eating white beans is similar to something that we ate a lot when we were in Italy, in one part of Italy, namely in Florence. Once we left Florence and went south just a little bit, like an hour, the restaurant menus are totally different, which is what I love about Italy. They eat what's like literally grown in that region. Hello, that's the way we should be eating anyway. So our favorite dish was this amazing white bean dish. It was so simple. It was like, I mean, essentially from what I can gather, it was just white beans kind of cooked in this a vegetable broth with some garlic. I mean, it was really simple. I mean, probably some oil as well, but just really simple. So they were kind of creamy and brothy and a little salty and just really fantastic. And then we also had like white beans in a red sauce. Like you can make it like a simple red sauce, really easy, which is how I like to eat. I like to eat pretty simply. I really like peasant food. That's probably my favorite kind of food, is just simple peasant food, just these basic whole foods. So you can also make a quick white bean pate that's great for raw vegetables, kind of similar to what I said before about the kidney beans. But here's a little white bean pate that I have and that I usually spread on some crostini, you know, like a crusty baguette, and then you just toast it with some, you know, little oil or maybe just some garlic. So in a blender or food processor, add 1 15-ounce can of white beans. If you're doing this from scratch, it's about a cup and a half. Okay, so one can or a cup and a half of white beans drained and rinsed, a few tablespoons of water, a couple tablespoons of fresh lemon juice, a tablespoon of Dijon-style mustard, 1 teaspoon of minced garlic. I never measure my garlic, but there you go. A pinch of salt, a pinch of black pepper. You blend until smooth, and then you just garnish it, you know, kind of spread it on the crostini, garnish it with some freshly chopped parsley and a sprinkle of paprika. It's beautiful. It's yummy. It's easy. It's delicious. Okay. And sage also goes really well with white beans. You can add a little sage to what I just described above, or even to the white beans in the vegetable broth that I mentioned. A little bit of sage. Sage goes a little bit, goes a long way. So don't overdo it on the sage. Next bean I want to talk about are pinto beans. Pinto in Spanish literally means painted. And pinto beans are called such because they have this wonderful mottled skin, dotted skin, and mottled, hence pinto, painted. The mottled skin is much more noticeable when the bean is dry, but when it's cooked, obviously it's pink. It is the most common bean in the United States and northwestern Mexico, and it's often eaten whole or mashed and refried, and it's often served that way in burritos. Speaking of which, it's probably worth mentioning the issue of getting burritos in a restaurant. If it's a traditional Mexican restaurant, they often put lard in with the refried beans. That's the fat they use, the animal fat they use when they're refrying the beans. But they don't always do that. Sometimes they use vegetable oil. And in fact, out here, you know, where we have a lot of traditional Mexican restaurants, I'm here in, you know, in San Francisco Bay Area, there are a lot of restaurants that use vegetable oil now. So just ask. If they only use lard in their refried beans, ask for whole beans, which I think are healthier anyway. And the whole beans will usually be whole pinto beans or whole black beans. If they don't have any of those things, go to a different restaurant. And for what it's worth, Taco Bell's refried beans are completely vegetarian, completely vegan, no lard. You just ask for it with no sour cream or whatever it is. It's been a long time since I had a Taco Bell refried burrito. But if you're ever desperate and on the road, like on a road trip or something, or you're traveling, it's helpful to know that the Taco Bell refried bean burritos are vegan. So again, I use the pinto beans in the 3-bean chili that I mentioned. You can make it a 4-bean chili. You can make it a 5-bean chili. You can make it just a 1-bean chili, whatever. But the pinto beans goes in there as well, along with my kidney and my black. When I make my own refried beans, which you can do by just mashing up pinto beans with a fork and then throw them in some little bit of oil and some garlic and onions, really yummy, adds lots of flavor, and throw that in a taco or whatever you want to do with it. And you can add pinto beans again to your salad or just throw them in any soup or stew. Another bean, black-eyed peas, are also called cow peas, are also fantastic, and you can add those to salads as well. They are traditionally eaten on New Year's Day in the southern United States and in some other parts of the United States, and they're the basis for a traditional dish called Hoppin' John, which is made of black-eyed peas with rice and seasonings. And I have a Hoppin' John recipe from a recent cooking class we did on soul food. It's called Comfort Food Soul Food, and there's a recipe packet under Comfort Foods. The traditional meal, this Hoppin' John, is also served with collard greens or mustard greens or any kind of greens. So my recipe also includes some sauteed greens. And it's also supposed to bring good luck. That's why it's served on New Year's Day. So the it brings good luck and financial enrichment. So the peas stand for the coins. They represent coins. And then the greens symbolize like paper money. Get it? You know, like a little luck and prosperity. And cornbread often accompanies the meal. And I do have a cornbread recipe online, but I also have a cornbread recipe. Well, it's the same one in the cookbook, Joy of Vegan Baking. Rice and black-eyed peas is a popular dish in Jamaica and other Caribbean islands. And in Vietnam, black-eyed peas are also used in a sweet dessert. I'm not going to try to pronounce it, which is basically black-eyed peas with sticky rice and coconut milk. And I also have a sticky rice with coconut milk recipe in my cookbook, don't you know? It's a sticky rice with coconut milk and, you know, and mango is what the recipe is. Yum. But if I had to choose just one bean, if I were on a deserted island and I could choose only one bean, that would be the chickpea, aka garbanzo bean. I absolutely adore chickpeas. It's probably safe to say that I eat them every day. I would say almost every day. I eat them in my salad, like I said, for lunch. And I also love them as a snack. I just like opening the can of garbanzo beans. I drain them, I rinse them. Yeah, you could sprinkle a little salt. I could even put a little garlic powder or a little onion powder in them, right? Just a little snack. Yum. Just pop them in your mouth. I make hummus pretty frequently. I make falafel burgers, chana masala, lots of goodies with chickpeas. My famous and delicious Better Than Tuna recipe. Better Than Tuna. It uses chickpeas instead of tuna fish. Like, why would you want to use tuna fish? You can just use chickpeas. And it's really incredible and it's really easy. So just pulse the chickpeas in a food processor and get them kind of flaky. And then add all the ingredients that you would use to make, you know, like a tuna salad. Eggless mayonnaise, which the best is garlic aioli by Wildwood, but you can get vegenaise or neonaise and any other wonderful eggless mayonnaise. Walnuts, which I like in mine. Salt, pepper, you can add chopped celery, chopped carrots. And again, it's in my 30 minutes meals recipe, which is ridiculous because it takes like 10 minutes to make, but basically that's all it is. So they're just versatile. They're so versatile. And they're in so many different cultures' cuisines. They're in Indian cuisine and Pakistani cuisine, Middle Eastern cuisine, Mediterranean cuisine, and so many others. Chana masala, which I mentioned I just made the other night for dinner. It's a delicious Indian dish. Chickpeas are called chana in Hindi and in Bengali. And masala just refers to a mixture of spices. So chana masala is just chickpeas with a mixture of spices. And I have a chana masala recipe in my Indian packet called Curry in a Hurry. Chickpea flour is also used a lot in places like Burma and in Sicily. They make a fritter out of chickpea flour. So it's just amazing. So let me give you my favorite hummus recipe. This is my hummus recipe, and I make this frequently. I make it a lot. Now, you can buy store-bought hummus if you want, but mine's better, and it's cheaper. It's amazing how expensive hummus is. It's ridiculous. Don't buy store-bought hummus. You can make it for pennies doing it from home, and it's so fast. The no queso quesadillas I made last night, the hummus was made from scratch. Now, the black beans were made from scratch too, but, you know, not counting the time it took to soak and cook the beans, because whatever, you could just use canned beans for this. So making these no queso quesadillas, it took me 10 minutes to put this meal together. And I'm not kidding. And this is including making the hummus from scratch. So here's my hummus. Ready? It's one can of chickpeas. Equivalent would be 1.5 cups of chickpeas. Now, I always double this, but this is the single recipe. One can of chickpeas, 1 tablespoon of tahini. Now, tahini is just sesame paste, which you'll find in the grocery store near peanut butter or where other Middle Eastern ingredients are. 1 teaspoon of cumin, a few cloves of garlic, peeled, but don't bother chopping them. Throw them in whole. So what else? A few dashes of salt, which you can add to taste, you know, which is great about making hummus or anything like this from scratch. You can kind of, you know, kind of make it, taste it, see if it needs anything, and then add anything else. You really can't go wrong. Just don't oversalt in the beginning, okay? Next, about 1/2 a lemon squeezed in. And that's it. I mean, that's basically it. And then some water to thin it out to create the consistency you want. Now, I don't add oil to mine. I don't think you need to. But if you wanted to, you can add a little stream of a good olive oil if you want to. So what I do is I put all of those ingredients, sans the water, not with the water yet. I just put the, I put through the chickpeas, the tahini, the cumin, the garlic, the whole garlic cloves, the, a couple dashes of salt, and 1/2 a lemon squeezed. I puree it in the food processor, you know, give it some time. I turn it off, knock down all the sides because, you know, there's going to be a lot that didn't get pureed kind of on the side of the bowl, the food processor bowl. Kind of knock that down, pour in a little water at that point, run it again. And I do that until I have the right consistency and the right flavor. So I'll taste it if I want a little more salt in, I'll just sort of another pinch of salt in. But I want it to be a consistency that I can spread, but that isn't so thin that it's watery. Okay. The other thing you can do is add like 1/2 of a roasted red pepper. You can add sun-dried tomatoes. You can add olives. You can add roasted garlic, a little cayenne pepper, anything you want, a little paprika if you want like a little red color in there, whatever. But it's really fast. And like I said, I usually make 2 batches at a time. So I have some in the fridge to snack on with some raw vegetables. But if I do make the quesadillas for my husband like I did last night, it makes about 4 quesadillas, the double batch makes about 4 quesadillas. And I did use that whole batch. There's a little bit left over. Actually, it probably makes a little more than that because I was snacking on the hummus before I made the quesadillas. So it actually makes more than I'm saying. It makes more than you need for 4 quesadillas. So probably enough for 5, maybe even 6 quesadillas. I would say that's pretty safe to say. But hummus doesn't freeze very well. So if you, I still recommend that you make a bunch in advance, but it doesn't freeze very well. And then you can use it as a sandwich spread. You can use it as a dip for vegetables or whatever. Okay. Now, I mentioned that the sugar in the beans is what gives people the discomfort they have when they eat beans. Some people experience gas. Some people experience bloating. The sugar molecules called oligosaccharides oligosaccharides. Write that down. You don't have to write that down. Anyway, so they're called, the sugar molecules are called oligosaccharides. And in beans, they're the same type as found in cabbage. So they have that same kind of experience. People who have problems with cabbage also have problems with beans. Now, an anti-oligosaccharide enzyme is necessary to properly digest these sugar molecules. And since a normal human digestive tract does not contain any anti-oligosaccharide enzymes, oligosaccharides that we consume in something like beans are typically digested by bacteria in our large intestine. Now, this digestion process, when the bacteria is digesting the oligosaccharides, this process produces the flatulence-causing gas as a byproduct, okay? So how do you deal with this? Well, there are a number of things you can do, a number of things. One, eat more beans. Honestly, the more beans you eat, the more your body becomes adjusted to these oligosaccharides. Really, on one hand, just eat more beans. Now, not to the degree that you're going to be so uncomfortable, but just keep adding more beans into your diet. I don't experience this issue. I have no problem eating beans. I probably did years ago when I first started adding more beans to my diet, but I can tell you that I have absolutely no problem eating beans. Another thing to note is that canned beans tend to be a little easier for people to digest, mainly because the sugars have been really cooked out. The beans have been rinsed really well, making these oligosaccharides less prevalent. That's another reason to definitely rinse the beans that have been canned and sitting in that liquid. You know, rinse those canned beans, okay? If you make beans from scratch, like I said, get rid of the soaking water, all right? After the beans are cooked, you can add a little vinegar if you're doing them from scratch, a little white vinegar, which helps. Other things people have recommended, though I haven't tried these myself, is to add kombu seaweed. Kombu is a kind of seaweed. Add the kombu in with the beans while they're cooking. They kind of soak up the sugars as well, still rinsing them once you're done. And then you can also try adding anise seeds, coriander seeds, or cumin seeds. Apparently, they also help during the cooking process. Now, some species of a particular mold produce an anti-oligosaccharide enzyme, which facilitates the digestion, our digestion of the oligosaccharides in the small intestine. This enzyme is currently sold in the United States under the brand name Beano. Right? You've heard of Beano. So if you take this enzyme at the same exact time you begin to eat the beans, not beforehand, not after, but at the same time when you begin to eat the beans, there's a really good chance that you won't experience the gas and bloating. Okay? The only problem with Beano is that it contains gelatin. It's a capsule, and the capsule is made of gelatin. But I have a vegetarian version of Beano in my store, and it's called Beanzyme. And if you went to CompassionateCooks.com, click on Stock Your Pantry. It's in the featured favorite section. It's right there on the main page, okay? Finally, fermented beans such as tempeh, remember, is fermented soybeans, or miso, which is also fermented soybeans. For example, fermented beans, they don't produce the intestinal problems that unfermented beans will, because the bacteria during the fermentation process tend to consume the offending sugars. Bet you didn't know there was so much to say about beans, and I probably have more to say, but I can't say any more right now because I'm really tired. So I hope this helps. I hope some of these have provided you with some guidance. I hope you venture forth and add beans to your diet. Don't fear the bean. The bean is your friend. On behalf of the beans, both human beans and non-human beans, this is Colleen with Compassionate Cooks. Thanks for listening.